Time. It's good to see you guys. Good to see you. Hello, hello. Hey, wake up. Okay. Let's start with a thought experiment, okay? You've just come home after a brutal, brutal day. Exhausted. The meeting, I don't know, those of you who are working, the meeting were endless throughout the day. The commute was horrible. And you're just wiped out from managing the weight of everything that day. And you walk up to your front door, and there, sitting right there on the driveway, on the welcome mat, is a massive, heavy package that looks like, if I can flip it. I turned it off, I think. Yes. Okay, good. I got it. So that package has your name on it, and the label is in big, bold letter that reads, "This package contains your dream life and your complete strategy to get there for the future." Okay, so the adrenaline run starts. That's incredible, right? Big package. You dropped your keys, you kneeled down, and then the agony hits. The package is secured with a heavy-duty, industrial-grade combination lock. And you don't have the code. You have no idea what the combination is. So you try everything. You guessed your birthday. Didn't work. You grab kitchen scissors. Can't cut. You escalate to a chainsaw. Didn't work. You pull up one of those YouTube lockpicking tutorials with the upbeat, royalty-free music where some guy claimed that you can break any lock with a paper clip and a gum. But it didn't work. Nothing works. The package is completely sealed, and you have no way to open it. That cruel experience, knowing something so near, really important, is right in front of you, but you can't get to it. A lot of us carry that feeling every single day. I know some of you who's considering switching jobs or switching schools, or those of you know that experience. The future feels locked. Career, relationships, identity, purpose, the long-lost feeling that you're enough, that you're yourself, it all feels sealed up. So if this feeling of being locked out is so deeply wired into the human operating system, do we see any glimpse of that from the Bible? The answer is yes. The Bible takes us to a surprising place and allows us to take a peek at the ancient symbolic throne room of the universe. In Revelation 5, the Apostle John is witnessing a massive cosmic event. The historical context here is so crucial. The book of Revelation, the last book of the Bible, is in the format or the genre that we call apocalyptic literature. Everyone say apocalyptic. Apocalyptic. What does that mean? We'll explain. So apocalyptic literature, like the book of Revelation, wasn't just written in a vacuum. It was written with its own historical and political and military background. It's written for the oppressed and marginalized Christian communities facing severe persecution under the Roman Empire. Now, let me pause and let me ask you this. Turn to the person next to you and finish this sentence in one word or a short phrase. Right now, the part of my life that feels most locked is blank. You've got 30 seconds. Go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right. All right, thank you. Feels like a soccer game. Doesn't it feel refreshed, like you get to talk? Okay. All right, thank you. So just hold that thought right there. Hold that feeling just for a moment. We're going to come back to it. For now, let's read this very short chapter together. I will read from the New Living Translation. I'll read the odd number verses, and if you can read the even number verses. Can you see from the last row? Is the font big enough? Can you see? Okay. No? Oh. Oh. Do you have a... Okay, come on front. Come on, please. Yeah. Or if you have a Bible app or some, you know, a hard copy Bible, that can work. I'd love to see you more clearly too. So if you can sit in front. So even number verses. Verse 1. Then I saw a scroll in the right hand of the one. Oh, my. Okay. The right hand of the one who was sitting on the throne, there was writing on the inside and the outside of the scroll, and it was sealed with 7 seals. Please. I apologize, I should increase the font next time. But no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll and read it. Please. Yes. But one of the 24 elders said to me, "Stop weeping. Look, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the heir to David's throne, has won the victory. He is worthy to open the scroll and its 7 seals." Okay, verse 7. He stepped forward and took the scroll from the right hand of the one sitting on the throne. Please. And they sang a new song with these words, still my, "You are worthy to take the scroll and break its seals and open it, for you were slaughtered, and your blood has ransomed people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation." Then I looked again, and I heard the voices of thousands and millions of angels around the throne, and of the living beings and the elders. And then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea, they sang, "Blessing and honor and glory and power belong to the one sitting on the throne and to the Lamb forever and ever." We will zoom into this chapter on 3 things that appears in this package. The locked scroll, the unexpected hero, and the new song. You get that? Scroll, hero, song. Okay. Part 1, the locked scroll. No one is worthy. John is in a vision. He sees God on the throne, and in God's right hand, there's a scroll. In the Bible, the right hand is the place of total authority and power, which means this scroll is not a random book to read. It's the definitive legal decree of how the future of the universe would unfold. Okay? Notice how this scroll is written on both sides and sealed with seven seals. Both of those details carry a lot of weight. Parchments were expensive in the first century because they're made of animal skins. So they don't come along too frequently. So you make good use of them. Scribes didn't just waste it. So if a scroll was written double-sided, front and back, it meant that the document was completely full. The parchment was full of letters. There's no blank space left. It is a comprehensive story of reality. Okay, what about seven seals? Under Roman law, a highly sensitive document, highly secretive, sensitive, important document requires, such as a king's will, okay, a king's wish, death wish. That requires seven witnesses. Each of them will press their unique signet ring into wax to seal it. So seven seals signify that a document is guarded seven times with the highest possible legal security. It's locked tight. Then, a strong angel steps up and essentially shouts to the entire universe, "Who is worthy to break the seals on this scroll and open it?" He's asking the cosmos if anyone has the code. And the response is chilling silence. Not a single person, not a single angel qualifies to have the combination. The legal requirements are too high. No one possesses the moral authoritative weight to break those seven seals and unleash the future. And John starts crying bitterly. We're talking about loud, ugly, uncontrollable wailing. The full breakdown. Maybe you want to say, "Take a breath, oh John, Grandpa John. Surely someone will figure it out eventually, right?" But you need to remember what's at stake. The stakes are high. For the first century Christian readers, if God's scroll, which means God controlled history, if God's scroll stayed locked, it means that the oppressive, violent Roman Empire wins forever. There's no final justice for the martyrs. There's no hope for the marginalized. If the scroll remains sealed, the story of humanity ends in sin, death, and tragedy. Justice never comes. Everything that is broken stays broken forever. Can I be real for you, with you for a sec? A lot of us live with a quiet despair of that same cry. We look at our lives and we feel stuck. We scroll through IG, doom scrolling, and we feel behind. And we look at our careers, our relationships, our marriages, our makeups, our kids, and et cetera, et cetera. And how often do you think to yourself, "I'm hustling, I'm trying, I work so hard, but I still don't feel quite enough"? Why? Why? What's fascinating here is that the Bible validates our modern anxieties. Revelation 5 doesn't pat John on the elder didn't pat John on the back and say, "Cheer up, buddy, believe in yourself." John's vision starts with a stark, terrifying admission that human striving by ourselves is inadequate. It's not enough to force the universe into a good ending. Human efforts, human striving, without God's intervention, will always, always end up in tragedy. Raise your hand if you've ever felt this way. "I'm trying so hard, but I still don't quite feel like I'm enough." Raise your hand if you do. Thank you for being honest. Thank you for your vulnerability. No need to explain. I see you. I'm one of you. I know. But let's take a look at the second aspect. Well, that's the tragedy about the locked scroll. But let's look at the unexpected hero. The story didn't stop there, because in the middle of John's tears, one of the elders speaks up. He said, "Stop weeping. Look, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the heir to David's throne, has won the victory. He's worthy to open the scroll and its seven seals." That is a culturally loaded statement. It's actually an announcement, but it's loaded. For a first century audience in Jewish tradition, the Lion of Judah comes from Genesis chapter 47, I believe, which is the ultimate symbol of military might. That's when Jacob was on his deathbed, was blessing his son Judah. That basically the Lion of Judah is the ultimate symbol of military might, domination, and an undefeated military hero. We crave a savior, you and I crave a savior, whose power is defined by pure dominance, by force. He can crush the enemies on the skull. We want a winner. The root of David, and the second title, the root of David, means that he's the true king from David's line, from David's lineage. That's the guy who can finally open the future. So John turns to look. Lion of Judah, the root of David, Lion of Judah, a muscular, shouting, you know, big beast. And he turned and he looked, and what does he see? Not a lion at all, a lion. And not a pristine, fluffy, white lamb ball standing on a calm and peaceful meadow either. It's a lamb that looks like it had been slaughtered, bloody. Its mortal wounds are visible and still there. Yet defying all biology, this slaughtered lamb is alive and it's standing. To make it even more surreal, it possesses seven horns and seven eyes. Okay, I'm just going to say it. You know, I know it's a Bible, but you know, let's be real. Because I know what you're thinking. A lamb with seven horns and seven eyes sounds like a sci-fi monster, okay? Terrifying, honestly. You know, not comforting at all. How's anyone supposed to find this bizarre image reassuring? Well, that's the hurdle for us modern readers. Because this kind of apocalyptic, everyone say apocalyptic again, apocalyptic, because the genre, this kind of apocalyptic literature, it functions a bit like political cartoons in the ancient world, because you can't just say anything negative to the Roman Empire, so you use images to carry a message. So it uses highly exaggerated, coded imagery to convey politically sensitive truth, while bypassing censorship from the Roman authorities, which means we have to decode those horns and those eyes. In this visual language, a horn represents power, military power. The number seven, as we mentioned earlier with the seals, represents perfection or completeness. So seven horns equals complete, omnipotent power. Okay. And the seven eyes, the Bible itself says the eyes represent the Spirit's wisdom, the ability to see all things, omniscience. So this figure possesses the absolute power and perfect wisdom to rule the cosmos. But that infinite power is housed in the unexpected body of a vulnerable, slaughtered lamb, which means the lamb is not slaughtered because it's weak, or it's killed because it's dumb. This is the world's most intelligent lamb, omnipotent, omniscient lamb. But what makes a lamb special? That's the biggest twist in the Bible. The hungry lion is the slain lamb. He doesn't win by being the strongest or being the most successful or the one who's all A or who never gets hurt. He wins by being killed and then standing up again. I know that sounds backwards. Our culture tells us to never back down, never show weakness, never be vulnerable, and keep performing, keep working hard, and but the real hero of the universe wins by getting wounded, getting killed, and then come back to life. It's victory. Of course, you know who we are talking about. The imagery about that roaring lion of Judah, or this killed lamb but who is still standing, is the imagery of the Lord Jesus Christ. Its victory is deeply linked to the wound. The reason that he's an all-conquering king is because he is the slaughtered lamb. The real hero of the universe wins by getting wounded for weaklings, for weak earthlings like you and me. The conquering lion is a slaughtered lamb that ought to flip our script entirely. So, can you be honest for another sec? Would you, if you could choose the hero of the story, would you rather have number one, A, choice A, undefeated lion who never loses, okay, if you're choosing a hero for your story, or B, a lamb who gets wounded, killed, but still stands? Just think it. A or B? How many of you would choose, like, in your natural self, you would choose A? Raise your hand if you choose A. No? No? Nobody here is LeBron James fans, huh? Who will choose B? A weak lamb who's standing, slaughtered, standing. I love you already, brother. Most of us, if we're honest, according to our secular culture, we'll pick the lion. But God gives us the lamb. And then what's interesting is the elder told John audibly, the Lion of Judah. But then as the elder directs John's attention to look, he visually saw a lamb. And the lamb does something decisive. He walks over and takes a scroll from God's hand, just like that. Problem solved. No one can touch. Nobody can open. No one can dare to look. The lamb came and took it from the right hand. And remember that it's not given by God. You know, God didn't give the scroll to the lamb. The lamb took it from God, which means they're equal in authority. So just like that, the locked scroll, problem solved. Because the lock is now in the hand of the only one who has the combination. Let's look at the third aspect, the new song. In other words, why the whole universe starts singing, okay? Take the scroll is a linchpin, because it triggers the absolute earthquake of worship, of how the universe measures worth. The very second the lamb takes the scroll, there's an eruption of cosmic worship. The four living creatures, then the 24 elders, then the high-ranking, you know, celestial beings, then, you know, the believers of all the world, and then all across the universe, all creatures, they fall down in worship and in reverence. They're holding the 24 elders and the four living creatures were holding harps and golden bowls full of incense. Do you know what's in the bowls? The prayer of God's people. So when you're down here on earth, yelling to God or crying after a terrible day, we've all been there, feeling like your prayers are just bouncing off the ceilings. This text makes a radical claim that if your prayers are sincere, they're actually kept in the throne room of the universe with the ultimate authority, that God actually hears in those bowls are the prayer of saints, that whatever you pray to God directly appeared at the nose tip of the master of the universe with the ultimate authority. It bridges the huge gap between the grand cosmic scale of worship and the deeply personal human experience. Your feelings and your prayers have been captured, preserved, and brought directly into the center of reality. And then The music starts. They begin to sing a new song. You're worthy to take the scroll and break its seals and open it. If you were slaughtered and your blood has ransomed people, for you were slaughtered and your blood has ransomed people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation, and you have caused them to become a kingdom of priests for our God, and they will reign on the earth. Then millions of angels join. Then every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea starts singing to this, and the song never stops. It's almost like a ripple that starts from the throne room at God's throne, and it ripples out. And first, the four creatures, the 24 elders, then believers, then angels, and all creatures of the universe. They're not saying you're worthy because you're out-hustled everybody. They're not saying you're worthy because you crushed your enemies with your immense strength. The lyrics specifically and only ties his absolute worthiness directly to his sacrifice. It goes on to declare that he made those ransomed people a kingdom of priests who will reign on the earth, a huge status update. The lamb didn't just survive his wounds. The lamb used his sacrifice to purchase people and to elevate them from marginalized outcasts to cosmic royalty. He lifts us up. And that changes the soundtrack of our lives. Most of us are still singing an old song that goes something like, I have to prove I'm enough. I have to earn my place, find my love. In one short phrase, what does that old song sound like in your own life right now? You can just think about it. The old song that says, you have to earn your future, your worth, you have to perform for others. This new song fundamentally shifts the paradigm of human value. The lyrics of the universe change from, you must earn it, to it has been paid for. Someone else already paid the ultimate price. You're already purchased. You already belong. You already possess the dignity of the Son of the Very High God who calls you his friend. The right to reign, the right to a future, it was bought with the blood of the Lamb. The package on your front porch is now open, not because that you managed to operate your chainsaws, but because of a Lamb who surrendered himself on the cross on Calvary. That is why the whole universe, at the beginning of the chapter, the whole universe was on pause. And now the whole universe burst out into singing. The future is forever and ever unlocked. And the one who opened it did it by being wounded for us. And that's the combination that should reorient everything in our lives. A quick summary. We have seen the locked scroll. We have heard the announcement of the lion. We have watched the slain lamb taking the scroll. And we have heard the new song of the whole of the entire universe. But do you know that the point of this chapter is not just about information or to fulfill your curiosity? It's about an invitation. Can you see that Revelation 5 leaves us with a challenge to stop trying to prove that you are worthy of the universe? Stop stressing over the impossible combination locks of your future, your life, trying to force it open with your bare hands. Just stop. Lift your eyes and look at the Lamb whose title is the Lion, who was slain and who, yes, stands for you. He's the only one worthy. The elder says that. The creatures say it. The angels say it. He's the only one worthy. Worthy is the Lamb. He already opened the scroll. Your future is safe in his hands. I want to leave us with one last thought. Question. If the ultimate metric of cosmic power and cosmic leadership is a sacrificial lamb, how does that change the way you and I operate? Think about who we promote in our lives. We have built a system that artificially rewards lions, people who display ruthless dominance, who refuse to admit fault, and who hide their failures at all costs. We promote the loudest voice in the room. But if the Lamb is a true model of authority, perhaps we ought to hear it. True power looks like humble yet bold empathy. It looks like transparency about our own limitations. What will happen to our families if we stop? What will happen to our church if we stop trying to breed lions and started cultivating the quiet, subversive strength of the Lamb? And maybe, just maybe, the best shift you can make today is realizing that you don't have to carry the weight of unlocking the universe and unlocking your own future anymore. In the next 15 seconds of silence, I want you to answer this in your heart. What would it look like for me in stop trying to open the package myself and simply rely on the Lamb? How about let's respond in the way that heaven responds, by looking at Jesus and singing, "Worthy is the Lamb." I'm going to pray, and then we'll sit in a short moment of silence. You don't have to say anything loud. I just want the eyes of your soul, the eyes of your heart to look at Jesus, to look at the Lamb who was slain, yet standing for you with blood and wounds. Look at the Lamb. Jesus, thank you that you're the Lamb who was slain and still stands. Thank you for taking the scroll. Thank you that our future is not locked in our performance, but held tightly in your hands. Help every person in this room to stop striving on themselves to be enough, but simply look at you. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. You alone are worthy. You deserve all of our praises and glory and honor and thanks. Amen.